If King Abdil begins.
My mouth hung open in shock as the Slave King's transparent form burst into flames and began to grow. For every second that passed, his appearance seemed to gain more solidity and detail as his form came into being, touching down on the ground slowly. Wearing the same armor that Graves wore, Slave King Abdil's new body stood nearly 7 feet tall, complete with an ornate crown on his head. Holding a hand up high, a flaming sword conjured itself into being, centering itself in his grip. Hefting the blade high, his featureless gaze roamed the chamber as if in search of something.
Oh, what the fuck did you do, Graves?
The spirit before me blazed with immense energy, my true sight displaying the creature as one blinding mass of magic. With a blink, I deactivated the ability, instantly feeling relief as the aura vanished from my sight, leaving me only seeing its corporeal form. Heart clenching at what I might see, I focused on the reborn ghost, bringing up its tag, which was quickly followed by the chime of a new quest. Slave King Abdil, Etheric Manifestation, Elite Boss, Level 14. New quest, the Slave King Reborn. Multi-group, evolving quest. Slave King Abdil, a Nefarian king of an ancient age, has found a way to return to life. He has set his sights on rebuilding his old dynasty and bringing the region under the reign of his iron fist. Stop him before he regains his full power. Slave King Abdil slain, 0 out of 1. Difficulty, very hard. Reward, experience, and renown.
Don't we have enough shit to worry about?
I quickly felt my heart sink as I scanned the king's level followed by the system's new quest before dismissing it from my vision.
An etheric manifestation? Does that mean he's made of magic now?
Ah, there you are, Graves.
The newly formed king called at Graves's crawling form, temporarily ignoring the rest of us.
Did you think you could escape me?
Scanning my surroundings while the king's focus was elsewhere, I saw a savagely burnt amaranth straddling the goblin shaman, having bit down into the creature's arm. Running to aid my familiar, I saw that the rest of the party had already resumed hostilities with the other goblins in the room and appeared to have formed a pocket of defense around the captured expedition members I had seen earlier.
Lyrian, help!
Amaranth's mental voice sounded desperate as a feline yelp of pain reached my ears. In the split second that my attention had been focused elsewhere, the goblin shaman had somehow knocked Amaranth off of him, sending the puma flying a short distance through the air. Seeing the skull on the shaman's staff blazing with flame, I desperately cast Blink Step, appearing half a stride behind the kneeling shaman, tackling it from behind. The fireball shot uselessly into the air, splashing against the far wall as I rode the goblin to a stop. Twisting under me, the goblin shaman's elbow shot out, catching me on the edge of my helmet as it spun onto its back. Recoiling from the blow, I blinked repeatedly, trying to get rid of the spinning stars in my vision. Reaching out blindly before the goblin could attack me again, I felt my hand grab the arm holding the burning staff, pinning it against the ground. I felt bones snap under my brutal grip as I began to squeeze with every ounce of strength I had. The goblin shaman screamed in pain as the staff fell uselessly from its grip, the eyes of the smoldering skull winking out as it clattered to the ground. Angling razor downwards, I stabbed the blade deep into the goblin's shoulder, the same instant its still functioning hand touched my chest. I didn't even have a chance to see what spell the goblin cast before I was suddenly blown off the goblin by an intense wave of force. I sailed through the air, spinning wildly before slamming back into the ground with a crunch. Wheezing, I slowly collected myself as the stunning effect of the shaman's spell began to wear off. I forced myself into an upright position, seeing that the goblin shaman had recovered his staff. The skull on the tip of the staff blazed with fire once more as the shaman chanted the final words of the spell that would send a massive fireball streaming towards me.
I'm fucked!
The realization crystallized in my mind as I tried to stand, the effects of the shaman's spell on my mind preventing me from casting Blink Step in time.
No!
Amaranth's voice pierced into my head as he suddenly leaped onto the shaman's back, sending him crashing into the ground once more as his deadly teeth sank into flesh, disrupting the spell in the last possible instant. I heard bones crack and snap as Amaranth shook the goblin shaman by his neck, thrashing the creature against the ground. Blood splattered everywhere as Amaranth dug his claws into the goblin's flesh, working to rip and tear the shaman's head free from his body. In one violent motion, the puma tore the filthy creature's head free of its body, the sound of tearing flesh and crunching bone filling the air as the goblin shaman died. Amaranth spat the goblin's head onto the ground, roaring with victory as he celebrated his kill, causing the slave king to turn his attention towards us, sensing the goblin shaman's death.
"You have dared to kill my servant!"
His voice boomed from the far side of the dais, his body slowly turning towards us, an orange glowing orb forming at the tip of his blade.
"Such an affront will not stand!"
Before I could even fully comprehend what the king had said, the orb shot forth, crossing the room with blinding speed. It crashed into Amaranth's form, unerringly changing direction as it compensated for the cat's attempt to dodge mid-flight. An explosion of fire consumed my familiar, leaving nothing but dust behind.
"No!"
I felt something tear deep inside me as Amaranth died, taking a piece of my soul with it. A heavy weariness instantly settling over me as a pair of messages appeared in my vision. "Your familiar, Amaranth, has been killed by Slave King Abdiel. Your soul is weakened. All ability scores and skills have been reduced by 10% for the next 24 hours until your familiar responds."
"And now you."
The incandescent Slave King began walking towards me, his long strides allowing him to quickly cross the room.
"I was thinking the same thing."
I forced myself to meet the king's advance.
"We're with you, Lear,"
Caius's voice called out from behind me, a trio of magic bolts and an arrow sailing over my head, splashing against the corporeal spirit. Glancing behind me, I saw that the rest of the party had taken care of the goblin stalkers, though not without injuries or casualties themselves. Along with the missing presence of Amaranth, I now noticed that Sierra was no longer with us, party sense now telling me that she was far away in the direction of Oldford.
"One more time,"
I thought to myself tiredly as I started running towards the Slave King.
"Just one more boss, then we can log off and rest."
I charged up the dais, noticing that the king had stopped advancing, shielding himself with one arm against the magical attacks of our mages.
"Pitiful,"
his voice took on a mocking tone as he shouted at us.
"I once wielded magic that could ruin entire cities. You insult me with your novice-level spells!"
"And yet you died," I shouted, unable to keep myself from taunting the king as I closed the distance. Choosing not to reply me, the Slave King instead hefted his flaming blade, extending a hand towards me.
"Here goes nothing,"
I gripped Razor tightly as I watched the Slave King's blade. The moment I saw the sword begin to move, I ground to a halt, needing to shed every bit of speed I could for what I was about to try. Abdiel lunged forward, swinging his blade in a wide arc, not intending to give me any space to escape. But I didn't plan to escape. The world blurred as Blinkstep took me directly behind the Slave King's outstretched form. Spinning, I sliced out with Razor, the blade passing through the corporeal spirit's leg with a flash of magic before resealing itself. Seeing a delightful message appear at the bottom of my vision. "You, Power Attack 1, Slave King Abdiel for 52 points of damage."
"Yes! We can hurt it!"
I managed a second cut across Abdiel's back before the Slave King spun on me, planting a brutal kick on me that sent me flying across the room. Slave King Abdiel hits you with Mighty Kick for 123 points of damage. I flew through the air a short distance before slamming into the ground and skidding to a stop. Coughing, I clutched my chest reflexively as I gasped for air. Lifting my head up, I looked back at the Slave King who had turned to meet the rest of the group's assault. Magic flew through the air, slamming into the Slave King's body, temporarily streaming ether from every blow. As I stood up to rejoin the fight, I caught sight of Graves barely 20 feet away from me, digging desperately through the rubble on the ground. With a cry of triumph, Graves picked something up off the ground, immediately cursing and throwing it. It landed with a heavy thump and began quickly rolling across the ground. I spotted the object as it rolled past me, a heart-stopping tag appearing in my vision highlighting the item. Annulment Sphere.
That's the thing that was floating in the pillar. I instantly realized why the goblin shaman had forced the sphere out of the pillar before the then-possessed Grave stepped into it. He was worried it would consume him.
We can kill the Slave King with this.
I lunged towards the sphere, the same instant Graves recovered from his fumble, his eyes landing on me.
You!
He spat, pure hate crossing his features.
This is all your fault!
What the fuck did you do, Graves? I shouted back at the man as we both moved to chase the rolling sphere.
You fucking unleashed this monster! You gave me no choice!
Graves drew his sword, abandoning his pursuit of the sphere, instead choosing to advance on me.
You ruined everything I had planned. I was gonna be rich. I was gonna be famous.
Cry me a fucking river, Graves. I sliced Razor through the air as I assumed a defensive posture, baiting Graves to attack me. You made a play for Aldford and lost. Grow up and move on.
No,
Graves shouted, his glance momentarily turning towards the annulment sphere, before looking up at me and rushing forward.
If I can't have Aldford, no one will. The world will see my vengeance firsthand. They'll watch your precious village burn to ash. I'll take that sphere and hide it somewhere where no one will ever find it. Everything will burn.
Our blades slammed together as I met Graves' charge head-on, his overwhelming strength having vanished with the spirit's departure. He seemed surprised to find me not only having blunted his assault, but to be forcing his blade aside.
Give it up, Graves!
I taunted the man, suddenly pulling back on our exchange and landing a heavy kick in his stomach and sending him reeling backwards. Disengaging, I quickly ran in the direction I'd seen the sphere roll.
I beat you senseless when you still had your armor's fancy stat boosts. Without those, you're nothing but a scrub novice now. I'll show you how well I fight if you ever stop running from me!
Graves roared as he gave chase, swinging his sword in a vicious overhand chop at my head as I ground to a stop, spinning to face him. Easily sidestepping the wild swing, Graves's charge carried him rushing past me, allowing me the opportunity to land a bleeding slash across his arm.
Last chance, Graves! Surrender!
I called to the man as he reflexively clutched his wounded arm.
I would rather fucking die.
Graves spat at my feet as he launched into another set of attacks, attempting to beat my defenses into submission.
If that's what it takes.
I was forced to pick up the pace as I worked to parry Graves's increasingly desperate attacks. After nearly non-stop combat since we arrived at this tower, mental fatigue had begun to set in, exacerbated by the attribute and skill penalties I was suffering due to Amaranth's death.
I have to end this.
I felt myself breathing heavily as I forced myself to keep up with Graves. A huge flash of light burst from behind me, instantly making me worry on how the others were faring against the Slave King. Catching Graves's blade on Razor, I channeled a shocking touch into the metal. The shock instantly traveled through both our blades and into Graves's hand holding his sword. With a yelp, Graves's grip faltered long enough for me to knock the blade from his hand. With no blade to block with, Graves was helpless as I ruthlessly thrust Razor into his gut, his mouth opening wide to scream. I followed up with a vicious kick to the side of his knee, shattering the joint as he instantly fell to the ground, writhing in pain.
Sit tight here for a second,
I told a screaming Graves, kicking his sword far away from him.
I want you to watch what happens next.
Having tracked the direction of the annulment sphere's journey, I found it nestled amid a pile of debris. Reaching for it, I paused for a heartbeat, steeling myself for what was about to come.
This seemed to hurt Graves when he picked it up.
Grabbing the sphere, I instantly felt a freezing cold sensation run up the length of my arm. Fighting the instinctive urge to drop the sphere, I tucked it under my arm as I turned to sprint towards the middle, where the Slave King loomed over my friends. Time appeared to slow as I ran, giving me a chance to read the alert messages streaming into my combat log. You have picked up an annulment sphere. Warning, holding an annulment sphere will drain your mana at a rate of 10% per second. If you run out of mana while carrying an annulment sphere, it will begin draining life 10% per second instead. Annulment sphere drains 64 mana from you. Annulment sphere drains 64 mana from you.
This is gonna be close.
I saw my already diminishing mana pool bleeding away at an incredible rate, giving me seconds before it started draining my life. I charged forward, hoping to make every single step count. Glowing like a blazing furnace, I saw the Slave King standing ahead of me, my friends scattered around him. In one hand he held a struggling Caius by the throat,
a wicked laugh echoing through the air. With a flash of magic, I saw Caius's body fade to dust, his presence vanishing from party sense.
I hope this works.
I triggered blink step one last time, a heartbeat before the last dregs of my mana was consumed. My world blurred in a kaleidoscope of colors as I reappeared barely 10 feet away from the Slave King. Continuing my desperate sprint forward, I banished the sudden pangs of thirst and hunger my lack of mana brought upon me, not wavering in the slightest. At the last instant, before I collided, the Slave King turned, somehow sensing my approach, but it was too late. I leaped from the ground. The same instant, a deafening shout filled the air, the annulment sphere outstretched before me. I passed into the Slave King's corporeal form, the sphere suddenly anchoring in the heart of his being, jerking me to a halt as my hand stuck to it, leaving me suspended inside the spirit. As with the ley line I had fallen into days before, the ether contained within the Slave King's manifestation burned me right down to my very core. This time, however, there was no relief, my mana-starved body desperately craving the fuel that it had grown accustomed to. My body began to draw on the ether within the Slave King, the annulment sphere then hungrily drinking from me and forcing my body to draw even more. I lost track of time as the cycle repeated itself, hunger and thirst at one moment satiated, then the next starving. I felt something change within me as my body struggled to find a way to survive. The next thing I knew, I was falling, blacking out as I fell to the ground. I awoke almost instantly, only to find the remaining members of the party standing over me, concerned looks over their faces.
Lyrian,
Freya called to me, rushing to bend down beside me.
Are you okay?
I don't know. I felt strange, in a way I couldn't quite pin down. Flashing system alerts danced in my vision, causing a spike of pain to shoot through my head as they cried for attention. Dismissing them for the time being, I tried to stand.
Careful there, Lyr.
Trace's hand appeared before me as he helped me stand up.
You don't look so great.
I'll be fine. As I reached for Trace's hand, I caught sight of mine, the glove having been completely burnt off, and seeing that it had suddenly become emaciated. It reminded me of the ghouls that we had fought just a short time ago, minus the razor-sharp claws. Nothing left but tendons, muscle, and bone.
I don't know what you did, Lyr, but you killed the Slave King,
Trace told me as I wavered on my feet unsteadily.
After you jumped into him, that orb you were holding went completely black. It just sucked him up.
I'm glad it worked out. I slowly scanned the room, seeing Natasha in the distance, kneeling amongst the expedition members held prisoner by the goblins what seemed like a lifetime ago.
Where is he?
I asked Drace, feeling my balance steady under me.
Where is Graves?
Over here, Lyrian,
Constantine called to me from a short distance away. Both he, Helix, and Abaddon stood around the kneeling form of Graves, his head staring down at the ground.
We haven't decided what to do with him. We were waiting until you woke up.
We can't take him back,
Freya said softly.
Best case scenario, it'll start a riot.
We can't leave him here either, Trace replied. He'll escape.
I slowly began walking towards Graves, my feet echoing through the near silent chamber. There was only one way that this could end, only one way to be sure that Graves would leave us alone for a time. Graves' head slowly rose as he heard my approach, his expression widening in fear as he saw my face.
If only you came with an open hand, Graves.
I stopped directly in front of the man, forcing him to look nearly straight up at me. We could have worked something out. Something better than this. Graves swallowed hard as I put both of my hands on either side of his head.
Either way, you gambled and lost.
I bent down slightly, angling Graves' head so he could see my face clearly.
I don't ever want to see you in this region again, Graves. Go play your game somewhere else. Far, far away.
This wasn't how it was supposed to work out,
Graves whispered, his eyes fixated on me.
I was supposed to be king. You can't do this to me. I
gripped Graves' head tight, looking him straight in the eye. Goodbye, Graves. And then I snapped his neck. Chapter 44. I let out a weary sigh as I dismissed the menu from my vision, my eyes having gone far too blurry to see straight, as I attempted to categorize and note the dozens of items laid out on the table before me. Walking over to a nearby stool, I gently sat down, my eyes staring out blankly at the now overflowing workshop. It had been close to 9 hours since the battle with the goblins, Graves, and Slave King Abdiel. Night had fully fallen by the time we arrived back at Aldford. After watching Graves' body dissipate into nothingness and hearing Huxley confirm his revival far away to the south, a sense of relief came over us as we began to decompress from the final battle. The region was safe, the dead were avenged, and those that still lived were rescued. Only Carver's escape marred our otherwise successful day, but given the alternatives, we felt it was a small price to pay. He'll either turn up at some point, or we'll never see him again, I thought to myself with a mental shrug, rubbing my face as I tried to clear my blurry eyes. Blinking slowly, the workshop came back into focus, my gaze falling on a long bone staff that once belonged to the goblin shaman resting on the far side of the table before me. I should probably double-check everything again, because, for the life of me, I can't even remember what I was just looking at. With a grunt, I forced myself back onto my feet and shuffled over to the staff, bringing up the item's information. Flame spit. Slot. Primary weapon. Item class, rare. Item quality, exceptional, plus 20%. Damage 22 to 42, bludgeoning, intelligence plus 4, willpower plus 4, durability 180 out of 180, weight 2 kilograms, favored class any arcane or divine, base material bone, special ability, wielder gains the ability to cast fireball and spewing flames, effect scales based on class level and evocation skill, level 12. I think Caius is going to get dibs on this one, I whispered to myself, slightly envying the warlock and his future prize. Whatever gets in his way after he gets used to wielding this won't have enough time to regret it. Setting the staff down, I moved over to a rather foul-smelling pile of furs that had also been taken off the goblin shaman, something that I had claimed for myself. Maybe I'll wear it after I wash it in the river 2, 3, or 9 times. God, this stinks. Fur mantle of swiftness. Slot, back. Item class, magical. Item quality, good, plus 15%. Armor, 19. Agility, plus 4. Durability, 80 out of 80. Base material, fur, weight, 1 kilogram. Favored class, any martial, level 12. I'll need to make some modifications to it. I made a face as the pungent smell of goblin funk wafted up from the furs, forcing me to let go of it. And sew a longer second length of furs in to have it cover my lower back. Stifling a gag, I took a step away from the foul-smelling mantle as I searched for cleaner air, coughing slightly to clear my throat. I looked back down at the table, my eyes falling on a pile of chainmail. Maybe I can turn this mess into something useful, too. I picked up the remains of a damaged chain shirt, my eyes following a long slice of broken links. I reverently ran a hand over this break, wondering what long-lost battles it had seen that had since been forgotten by this world's history. Thinking back to the chamber under the tower, I realized now that it had taken an embarrassingly long time after Graves' execution before we all realized that we hadn't quite explored the underground chamber we had urgently rushed into. I vaguely remembered walking around the perimeter of the room, finding only 2 points of interest. One was a collapsed stairway leading upwards to where the tower once stood, having filled with debris when it fell. The second was a small storage room that had somehow remained intact over the countless years since the tower's fall, filled nearly to the brim with a variety of supplies, sundries, and cast-off pieces of equipment in desperate need of repair and reforging. Among the dozens of prizes we found within the room, one was a barrel filled to the brim with broken and incomplete lengths of chainmail. Judging by ragged cuts and missing links in some of the samples we looked at, it was our belief that they had been deemed too damaged or too time-consuming to warrant repairing at that moment in time, and had been stowed there out of the way. A few of these pieces still bear the remnants of ancient enchantments, just like Razor did when I first found it. My eyes narrowed as I inspected the chain shirt even closer, feeling the coolness of the dark-colored metal in my hands. Blackened chain shirt, Slot, chest. Item class, relic. Item quality, fine, +10%. Armor, 0. Strength, +3. Agility, +3. Durability, 0 out of 0. Weight, 2.5 kilograms. Note, a skilled smith might be able to reforge this item.
I should be able to repair a few of these semi-intact shirts and build a new set of armor from the rest of the scrap.
I'll need a new set of armor for myself anyway. I turned my head over towards the charred mess that was once my Webwood Striker armor set, having been forced to cut the melted remnants of the armor from my flesh. Looking at the tattered scraps of the armor, I felt a momentary sense of loss wash over me, knowing that the first set of armor I'd ever made was destined for the fire pit. If nothing else, studying these chainmail scraps should teach me how to properly make chainmail. Setting the chain shirt down, I moved to the next item on the table, spotting several glowing jars of mana-infused ectoplasm. That one of the group members had looted from the remains of the Slave King's corporeal manifestation. The jars cast an eerie orange light on everything around them, and I wasn't quite sure what I was going to use the goopy substance for. Given where it had come from, I had half a mind to destroy the slime. But pragmatism had stilled my hand, since I didn't get the impression that it was actually dangerous. Maybe I'll find a stick later and stir it for a bit, see what happens. I moved on with a shrug, my tired brain unable to come up with any other ideas for the time being. Unfortunately, the ectoplasm was the only item that the Slave King had dropped, since, for reasons we didn't quite understand, the annulment sphere had shattered itself after absorbing the Slave King's essence, leaving two broken halves of what appeared to be plain, mundane iron on the ground. Probably for the best, I thought to myself, remembering the deadly touch of the sphere. At least for the time being. Now that we know such an item is possible, we'll find a way to make a new one if we really need one. The next item on the table was a finely lacquered rectangular box. I carefully spun the box to face me and unclipped the clasps that were keeping it securely closed and gently opened it. Staring back at me were a dozen intricately crafted etherscopes, all laid out perfectly with little metallic clips to hold them in place. Running a finger along one of the wands, I found it to be somewhat rough and grainy to the touch, a huge contrast to the one Donovan had. But that was because these etherscopes appeared to have been made of bone and not metal, something that Donovan said had never been attempted back in Iberia. Every etherscope ever made since the start of the war had always been metallic. He and Halcyon were both eager to see how these ancient bone etherscopes would measure up against the metallic version. So long as they don't burn my hand to a crisp when I use them, I'd consider that an improvement. I snorted to myself while closing the box carefully and sliding it back into place beside a pile of carefully stacked scroll tubes. Ah, this was probably the best part of our haul. Tucked deep away in the room we'd uncovered, we had found 6 scroll tubes filled to the brim with a variety of common spells, each tube containing nearly a dozen spell scrolls each, with multiple copies of the same spell. We now had access to spells such as Jump, Force Shield, Lesser Shielding, Flame Dagger, Fireball, Fire Whip, Pyroclap, Shocking Touch, and a handful more that we had yet to successfully interpret due to their complexity. The new spells would give our immediate circle of spellcasters a chance to greatly increase their versatility, and not have to spend precious class skill points on learning lower-level spells. Whatever our casters couldn't use, I planned to sell to the other adventurers in town, or offer them up as rewards for the endless list of tasks and projects that Oldford needed to have done. I can probably sell these spells for 2 to 4 gold each, and start earning back some of that gold I spent buying crafting materials. That's, of course, after I take a few of those spells for myself. A spark of excitement couldn't help but flare through my exhaustion as I looked forward to experimenting with a few new abilities. I smiled to myself, already imagining the future possibilities as I turned my attention towards a large crate on the floor. Almost done. Just this last box. And that hunk of scrap. Bending down, I cracked the lid of the crate open, revealing 18 gleaming prisms. Gently removing one from the crate, I lifted the near-translucent crystal into the light, turning it over in my hand. Completely smooth to the touch, each of the crystals were as long as my forearm and half the length across. We managed to identify them as all being translucent selenite crystals, However, we weren't quite sure what their purpose was for. After some debate between Donovan, Halcyon, Caius, and myself, we believed that the crystals may be mana batteries of a kind. Unfortunately, none of us had any real idea how to fill them. We did decide that pouring raw ether onto a crystal was probably not the best idea, and sounded like a good way to lose two rare items at the same time. Placing the crystal gently back in its place and sealing the crate, I was eager to be done inventorying our loot before logging off for the next day. I walked towards a familiar-colored length of scrap metal that leaned against the side of the forge and picked it up, turning it over in my hands excitedly.
Finally, the last item, and what will eventually become a massive long-term project in itself.
On our return from the underground chamber, we had crossed paths with the massive metallic pole again, a sudden revelation stopping us in our tracks. The entire pole was made completely out of metal, and had long lain abandoned since the tower's fall. It no longer served any purpose that we could discern, and would continue to molder until the tower one day collapsed around it. Saddened by the waste of such a precious material, a burning question entered our mind. What if we could somehow scavenge the pole and smelt the metal down for our own use? With Aldford on the verge of an incredible growth spurt, its burgeoning industry would soon begin to thirst for vast quantities of all metals imaginable. Recycling the already refined metal of the pole itself would serve to jumpstart local development and give us much-needed time to find and begin exploiting other ore-filled veins in the surrounding land. Given the size and density of the pole, however, I knew it would be a long-term challenge to figure out a way to somehow cut and transport large chunks of metal back to Aldford. A challenge I was more than willing to pay the other adventurers in the village to solve for me. Nothing motivates people better than a fistful of coins, or a few sets of magical armor crafted by yours truly. Not a bad haul, I declared, talking to myself as I looked over all the items for the last time, putting the piece of scrap metal down. That quest paid off in experience just as well as the tower did in loot. I remember my jaw nearly hitting the ground when I saw the experience and renown reward for completing the Slave King Reborn quest. Quest complete. The Slave King Reborn. Evolving quest. Multi-group. After a fierce battle and many losses, you and your companions have managed to kill Slave King Abdiel. The region is now safe from his reign of tyranny. Congratulations. Slave King Abdiel slain. 1 out of 1. Difficulty. Very hard. Reward. Granted to all members of participating groups. Experience points, 14,000. Renown, 1,000. In one fell swoop, all of us had earned little more than half a level's worth of experience and a sizable chunk of renown. We were also happy to find out that Ascend Online's quest system took into account that Frey and her group were still stuck on their final novice level and was delaying the quest's experience reward until they reached level 10. But our biggest surprise was that even those in the party who were unfortunate enough to die in the tower had also managed to receive the quest and still get credit for completing it. I had a feeling that the quest system had been designed to account for attrition and death within dungeons and special events, given how punishing it could be to respawn hours, if not days, away from where your group members were. Without such a system, I could see groups fighting far too conservatively, each member focusing on their own personal survival rather than actually working together to successfully finish a quest, likely leading to everyone failing the quest altogether. We still have no idea what renown is for. I brought up my character sheet, seeing that I'd already managed to accumulate a grand total of 1,105 points of renown. Best guess is that it has something to do with how involved you are in the world's story. Maybe it'll become more important down the road at some point. As I scrolled through my character sheet, my attention wavered to the dull outline of an alert I had read several times but refused to dismiss completely. With a sigh, I compulsively brought it up once more and read through the description of my new condition. Warning. The trait, Ether Warped, has been modified. You have gained a new ability linked to the ether warped trait. Due to prolonged exposure to raw ether while under the effects of an annulment sphere, your subtrait mana starved has been enhanced to mana void. Mana void, your body's hunger for arcane energy has become ravenous, turning your appearance gaunt as it desperately craves more and more mana in order to fuel your metabolism. For as long as you have mana, you do not require to eat or drink. However, if your mana reaches zero, your body will immediately begin to consume itself at a rate of one hit point for each second in mana deprivation state per second until mana is restored. All mana regeneration is permanently reduced by 100%. You have received the new ability, Mana Leech. Mana Leech, as a result from prolonged contact with an annulment sphere, your body's hunger for mana is so powerful you are now able to leech mana from any object or creature that you come in physical contact with, regardless of intervening armor or clothing that is not specifically designed to block the flow of mana. When this ability is activated, mana will be leeched at a rate of 30 mana per second. Any mana leeched will be added to your current mana pool, and any excess mana will be lost. This ability scales with class level and intelligence. Ugh! I let out a grunt of frustration, as this time I finally dismissed the alert instead of simply minimizing it. I looked down at my bony hands for a moment, clenching and unclenching them as I watched the tendons play through my skin. I took a deep breath and let it out slowly, willing myself to move past this new development. Okay. Appearances aside, it's not all bad. I can still fight, run, and move around. I'm a bit lighter than before, but still just as strong. While not ideal, I can still cast spells if I manage my mana carefully and focus on targets I can drain mana from. I slowly talked myself through my new abilities, trying to come to terms with them. I guess I'm kind of a mana vampire now, and if I ever run out of mana, I'll die in about... I paused for a moment, doing the math in my head. 36 seconds, assuming I'm at full health. Fuck. I sighed, realizing that in the heat of combat, 36 seconds could easily range from a lifetime to a single instant. What are the odds that if I've run out of mana, I haven't also been injured? Hell, if someone mana drains me, I could be dead before I even knew what was happening. Oh, hopefully that won't happen, I whispered to myself. The same instant Constantine walked into the room.
Hopefully what won't happen? Constantine asked me, before looking around the room and seeing that no one else was there. Talking to yourself, Lear?
Yeah, a little bit, I confessed as I waved the question away. Nothing serious, though.
You sure you're doing okay?
Constantine replied, raising his eyebrow in concern.
It's been a rough day. Hell of a rough week.
I agree with you there, I said wholeheartedly. I'm all right, just tired. You know what they say, what doesn't kill you gives you a lot of unhealthy coping mechanisms. Constantine interrupted me with a slight grin on his face. I couldn't help but laugh. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Just a little bit more, then we can unplug for a day or two, Constantine said warmly before beckoning me to the door. You said you wanted to talk to everyone in Aldford before we logged off, right? We managed to get everyone waiting in the town hall.
Ah, I'd forgotten about that. I wrapped a bony knuckle on my forehead as I moved to follow Constantine. All right, let's go. This shouldn't take too long. There's just one more thing I need to take care of. The town hall fell silent the moment I walked in, dozens of heads turning to see my arrival. I heard gasps of surprise as I stalked towards the far end of the room. Whispers of my new appearance quickly spreading throughout the crowd as everyone watched me with bated breath. Crossing the room, I saw the entire group waiting for me. They all stood in a line as they faced the gathered adventurers, purposefully showing off their battle-damaged armor. A crate had been dragged to the center of their line, serving as a makeshift stage for my coming speech. Hopping up onto the crate, I looked over the crowd as all the whispering voices began to quiet. I waited until I felt I had everyone's full attention, and then spoke the three words I knew everyone was waiting to hear.
Graves is dead!
There was a pregnant pause as everyone absorbed my statement. Then a single cheer broke the silence, followed by another and another, as applause began to thunder through the room. I saw looks of relief spread across nearly every face as days of built-up stress vanished in a heartbeat, everyone wildly celebrating the would-be tyrant's demise. With a smile, I basked in the celebration, waiting for everyone to bring their attention back to me. Sensing that I had more to say, the adventurers slowly fell silent, watching me with renewed anticipation.
Today, we have faced a major trial that not only threatened Aldford, but the entire region itself.
I paused, giving a chance for my statement to sink in. All because of one man's greed. In his blind quest for power, Graves unleashed a terrible evil on this land, an evil that would have consumed everything we've worked so hard to build. I waved my hand to indicate all my friends standing in front of me. But thanks to these heroes before you, we not only managed to stop Graves, we also managed to permanently put an end to the evil he let loose. We would have not been able to do this without the selfless sacrifice of Mir, who bravely stepped in the path of arrows destined for her friend Thea. I saw the lizard woman flinch at the sudden attention the crowd directed at her. Or Huxley, who caught Cyril just in time and prevented his fall into a burning inferno. When we were pressed by a horde of vicious creatures spawned from Nightmare itself, Cadmus, Halcyon, and Thorn did not hesitate to give their lives, so that the rest of us could have a chance at living. I continued speaking, watching the adventurers' attention shift with each name I mentioned. To protect our rescuees in the heat of battle, Sierra willingly stood a forlorn defense, sacrificing herself to ensure their survival. I quickly glanced at the three Mages Guild expedition members that we had rescued from the tower, having barely talked to any of them. I recalled Natasha quickly telling me their names as she excitedly introduced her former scoutmaster, Bax, and the two mages, Samuel and Quincy. We were victorious because we fought together and trusted one another completely, knowing that if one of us fell, the others would continue onwards and honor our sacrifice. I paused once more, scanning over the faces of the adventurers. Graves, on the other hand, died alone, a broken man, his greed having pushed everyone away from him. The crowd began to murmur its approval, a second round of applause echoing through the room. Holding up a finger, I motioned for silence, indicating I still had more to say. I stand here before you all to tell you that Graves is only the first to raise his hand against us. There will be countless more behind him that will also be driven by greed and lust for power as they try to carve out a piece of this world for themselves, uncaring of who they take it from. I held my hands up high to indicate the surrounding village. It will be up to us to defend what is ours and define what sort of world we want to make for ourselves. We must all stand together as comrades, resolute in the protection of our community and future. To that end, I am announcing the formation of a guild, one that will defend against those who wish Aldford and this region harm. I saw looks of surprise and excitement cross the faces of the adventurers in the crowd. This guild will be governed by the very idea of virtue as we transform this region into a shining example of what cooperation and hard work can accomplish. In honor of that ideal, we have chosen to call the guild Virtus, a word that dates back to the days of the Roman Empire, and a name that I hope will constantly inspire us to be better than we were the day before. All members within Virtus will strive to embody the ideals of valor, excellence, courage, character, and worth in every aspect of their lives. Our goals as a guild will be to ensure the safety of Aldford and the surrounding region, providing a safe haven for any who choose to make their homes within this land. We will protect those who ask for protection. We will stand against gross injustices, and if necessary, we will be the hand of vengeance for those who cannot stand up for themselves. Standing before you all are the founding members of Virtus, all of whom have bled in the defense of our new home today. I spread my hands out wide, indicating the group for a second time as the crowd began to cheer. It is because of them that we are all safe tonight. It is because of them that we can all lay our heads down and rest and know that there is no evil lurking in the night. It is because of them that we are all free. With my final words, all of the adventurers leaped to their feet in applause and began to press forward, eager to congratulate every group member in person. Hopping off the crate, I saw panic-stricken Constantine backing away from the advancing crowd, quickly looking over at me. What the hell, Lear? You were supposed to wind them down gently, not rile them all up, he shouted to me over the roaring cheers. This is going to take ages to get out of. Sorry, I yelled back with a smile. I just wanted a head start. A head start? Constantine looked at me with confusion. To what? The bathroom. I couldn't help but bark an evil laugh as I waved goodbye. And then, I logged off. Epilogue. Iberia, Tower of Atonement, Graves.
I sat huddled in the deepest and darkest corner of the room that I could find, gripping the crude bone shiv I'd fashioned so tightly I was worried that it would snap in my trembling hand and leave me defenseless again. I relaxed my grip ever so slightly, daring to exhale a short breath in hopes of calming myself.
"Where are you, Graves?"
A familiar voice called out for me, causing my heart to start thundering in my chest as I gripped the shiv tightly once more. I saw a shadow pass by the doorway before me, the soft patter of feet announcing the stalker's presence.
"You can't hide from us forever, Graves. We'll find you eventually. We always do."
I held my breath until the shadow passed, moving onwards into the dark. "Just 97 more days," I told myself, swallowing hard as I suppressed a momentary spike of anger. 97 days, trapped in a prison full of inmates that want you dead, in a prison where death is but a minor inconvenience. I'd lost track of how many times I'd been killed since I first arrived here 3 days ago, having stopped counting past my 10th death. Everything since my first death at that bastard's hands was a blur. I barely had enough time to realize that I'd respawned back in Iberia before I was unceremoniously tackled by a Justicar, stripped of my gear and put before a magistrate. All I remembered was that damned gavel banging and the sentence being read aloud. 100 days of imprisonment in the Tower of Atonement, the highest security prison Iberia had. A 30-story prison where they just threw the prisoners into and locked the doors behind them until their sentence is over. A prison full of angry killers with nothing to lose. It wouldn't have been so bad had none of the other inmates known who I was. I stared out of the doorway, trying to judge if it was safe enough to take a quick nap. When was the last time I slept? Yesterday morning? I blinked through sleepy, exhausted eyes, the darkness doing little to counter the weariness hanging over me. Unfortunately, nearly everyone from my group had been thrown into the prison before me, giving plenty of time for resentment and hate to fester. I was barely in the prison for 10 minutes before Micken found me and beat me to death with a brick. Ever since then, word of my arrival has spread, and nearly everyone in this prison spent their time hunting me day or night. It was all I could do to hide in whatever nook or cranny I could find, doing my best to stay ahead of those searching for me. I knew all too well what they would do to me if they found me. I did my best to stifle a yawn. I need to catch some sleep, or I'll start making mistakes.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
A feminine voice caused my eyes to widen in panic as I tried to find the source of the voice. Who said that? Where did that come from? I didn't dare move while I fervently scanned the room before me, gripping my shiv painfully tight. My heart hammered in my chest as I saw nothing but shadows before me. It has to be a trick to flush me out.
You were on the verge of becoming a king,
the voice continued.
But now you hide in the shadows like a rat, struggling to survive, all while your killer prospers. How does that make you feel?
Angry. I thought to myself, feeling the embers of rage kindle within my breast, still searching for the source of the voice. But there's nothing I can do about that now.
What if there was?
Pale white eyes suddenly appeared in front of me, just inches away from mine.
Ah!
I barely stifled a yelp as I instinctively stabbed out with my shiv, but before my crude blade could even reach the eyes before me, they vanished, leaving me alone in the darkness once again. Fuck, I'm starting to hallucinate. I ground the palm of my hand into my eyes, trying to banish the exhaustion that had crept over me. Holding my breath, I strained my ears, trying to hear if anyone was coming to investigate my gasp.
You aren't hallucinating, Graves.
With a burst of light, a pale-skinned woman appeared a short distance away from me, watching me with the same unsettling pale eyes I'd seen before.
I am really here.
Turn that light off!
Fear of being discovered by the roaming death squad searching for me overrode any concerns I had about speaking. I learned the hard way that light would draw them to me almost instantly.
They'll find us!
Oh, don't worry about anyone interrupting us,
the mysterious woman said dismissively.
I've taken steps to ensure that we will be left alone for a time.
I pointed my feeble dagger at the woman before me, wincing at the sudden bright light. Looking over her, I saw that the mystery woman was dressed in a pure white dress, save for a dark black mantle that covered her shoulders. Waiting for my cold appraisal of her to finish, she cocked her head at me, sending her raven black hair cascading to the side.
Precautions,
I echoed, while continuing to watch her intently, expecting that at any moment a dozen prisoners would come charging into the room. There's no dirt on her clothes yet. She must be new here. Maybe she wants to use my head to gain entry to one of the gangs.
I am not a prisoner.
An amused expression crossed the woman's face.
As if this place could contain me. To answer your second question, yes, I can read your mind after a fashion.
What are you? I asked hesitantly, realizing she had sensed the budding question in my mind before I'd even had the chance to fully form it. And why are you here?
The what is much less important than the why.
The woman smiled at me.
I am here to give you an opportunity for revenge, should you be willing to take it.
My eyes shot open in surprise before narrowing suspiciously. I've had my fill of opportunities, I replied bitterly. Look at where they've landed me. Take your cursed offer elsewhere and leave me be. The woman made a show of examining the surroundings, her expression forming one of distaste.
I can understand your apprehension, yet are you so enamored of your surroundings that you would not even care to listen to my offer? Or would you wish to continue being hunted for the remainder of your sentence?
I stared at the woman before me, my gut wrenching at the thought of another 97 days in this hellhole.
Fine. I will listen. A wise choice.
The woman took a short step towards me, clasping her hands together.
I have grand designs for the city surrounding us. However, I am limited in the actions I can take on my own. I find myself in need of an agent that can act on my behalf in areas I cannot reach.
And how will that help me get my revenge? I asked scornfully. I've been a puppet once before, and I'd be a fool to not have learned my lesson from the events that led me here.
And I would be a fool if I haven't learned that compelling obedience leads to unruly subjects.
The woman cocked an eyebrow at me as she spoke. I suddenly found myself questioning just how much she knew about me.
Worry not. You will have full independence without my overt interference. As for your revenge, that entirely depends on you.
The pale-skinned woman stopped before me, extending a hand.
Once you are firmly established where I need you to be, you should find yourself with near unlimited resources to pursue any goal you may have.
That is hardly enough for me to even begin to trust you. I looked down towards her outstretched hand, then back at her pale eyes.
Everything you've just said is vague and insubstantial at best, coupled with promises that can be broken at any time.
Perhaps it is, the woman agreed. But unless you take my offer, I will not tell you any more.
Then you can take your off. A shout from nearby interrupted me.
Hey, there's a light! It has to be Graves! Go, go, go!
The sound of rushing feet and laughter began echoing through the hallway. I looked up in horror at the woman standing before me, a devilish smile crossing her face.
Tick-tock, Graves. The offer is about to expire.
She waved her extended hand in front of my face.
You know what they're going to do when they get here.
I swallowed hard as I looked up at the hand hovering before me, the sounds of rushing bodies closing fast.
Damn you,
I croaked as I grabbed the woman's hand, feeling the world shift out from under me, leaving me falling through an infinite abyss. Discordant laughter filled my ears.
You have been listening to Ascend Online, Book 1, produced by Greg Lawrence, associate producer Emily Durr. Text copyright 2016 by Luke Chimalenko. Production copyright 2017 by Podium Publishing, all rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.